I started the morning as like texted the guy, said it's MGP day. Yes.
Hey everybody, it's episode 293 of Bourbon Pursuit, the podcast featuring news, reviews, and interviews with people making the bourbon whiskey industry happen. I'm one of your hosts, Kenny Coleman, and before we start today's podcast talking about MGP brands, here's your weekly bourbon news update. Last week on February 11th, the bourbon world lost a close member. Brett Ferench, or better known as Scotch Trooper on Instagram, passed away from his battle with pancreatic cancer. Brett was known for his detailed imagery by combining his love for Star Wars with whiskey, and he was one of the original social media influencers. Posing many Star Wars characters with bottles of whiskey, it amassed hundreds of thousands of views over his time. He was beloved by many brands and others in the community as well. The Scotch Whiskey Association has revealed that exports of Scotch whiskey have decreased by 23% in 2020, representing a $1.5 billion drop in sales that is largely responsible for COVID-19 and the increase on U.S. tariffs. The United States' 25% tariff on single malt Scotch whiskey led to exports falling by 32%, and that accounts for a third of the total global losses, where also airport and travel retail sales have dropped by a staggering 70%. Judges in the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Michigan entered consent judgments against Vintners Collective LLC and Go Gifts Incorporated for illegal shipments of alcohol into the state of Michigan. Michigan Attorney General Dana Nessel has sued the companies under the 21st Amendment Enforcement Act and the Michigan Consumer Protection Act, saying that they evaded the three-tier liquor distribution system. In further violations of the Michigan Consumer Protection Act, the defendants have agreed to each pay $10,000 fines, which is kind of a backwards turn and where we've been going with shipping lately. Now moving on to bourbon release news. Whistlepig is launching the Sasquatch Select series. The first two releases take the core 12-year-old Whistlepig rye whiskey, but they finish it in a Peruvian rum cask for the first release and a Shubly barrel for the second. Both of these are priced at around $150, and they're available in limited numbers directly from the distillery's online store. MGP has been a lot in the news recently because of their acquisition of Luxco. We talked about it on the last roundtable and how this will enable MGP's brands such as Remus to begin more nationwide presence with a bigger sales force. But what do we know about all their brands? Well, we're joined by Andy Mancini. He's the Vice President of Brands for MGP. And not only talk about their brands, but we also talk about the impact of what other brands get when they win awards based on the product that's sourced from them. We also talk about acquiring brands and their thoughts on the current contract distillation marketplace. And remember, if you like the show, please consider supporting us on Patreon. Not only do you support the podcast, but you get access to our private barrel club. And last week, we selected a total of 5 barrels, 2 from Old Elk, 2 from Taconic Distillery, and 1 from Yellowstone from Limestone Branch. We're moving towards our target of around 30 to 40 barrels this year, and our community is now over 900 people strong, and we'd love to have you join us. With that, enjoy today's episode, and here's Fred Minnick with Above the Char.
I'm Fred Minnick, and this is Above the Char. This week's idea comes from Michael Carton, who writes me on fredminnick.com. Hey, I've got a possible idea for your Above the Char. How do you clean your Glencairn glasses? Ooh, Michael's bringing up a bit of a interesting conversation that I have had many times over the years. Now, it's no secret that the Glencairn is my absolute favorite glass, and I have used every glass from the Neat Glass to the Norlands to these Rydells that they've tried to shove down my throat in years past, and none of them live up to the quality of the tasting experience for bourbon to me better than Glencairn. I think Glencairn is the absolute whiskey glass there is, if, and this is a big if you prefer your whiskey neat. If you're someone dropping ice cubes in there, then, you know, you can check out the Glencairn Canadian glass. But, you know, to me, it's a, you know, there's 20 glasses with, you know, that take rocks that are competitive. But to me, Glencairn is the clear-cut winner for the neat sipping. Okay, so how do you clean it? All right, so there is there is the soak. So we will have a first we rinse them out. So obviously I do a lot of tastings blind. I do a lot of tastings and I don't drink everything that's in the glass. So we will pour them out. We will pour them out and then we will do the soak. We will let them soak for a couple hours and then we will drain that and then we will add new soap and then we will soak and wash them, thoroughly rinse them. If you are not thoroughly rinsing them, you're going to get yourself in trouble. There'll be a little bit of a soap note that will come in. So all whiskey glasses are subject to this, but they all kind of have like these concaves and everything that if you don't, you know, like a fast rinse may not get the job done. So you really have to make sure that water is saturating the glass and you rinse it really, really strongly and then you air dry it. So you don't towel dry it. If you towel dry it, you could get something left over from the towel in there. You can get a little piece of the cloth, even if it's a paper towel. You towel dry it if you're in a rush and you need the glass for a tasting. But if you have the time, you air dry it. So you have like a rack that you dry it on. The Glencairn actually recommends that you do not use your dishwasher. So the dishwasher will pound it over time. In fact, if you, you know, there are some industrial dishwashers that have bruised the glassware and they kind of turn a shade of purple. So you really should be trying to, you know, do a hand wash with these if you want to maintain them. Also, if you are using a dishwasher at home, and you're like me, and you do not always rinse your plates off. Listen, what's the point of a dishwasher if you got to rinse the damn plate off all the time? I'm not talking about like putting a whole piece of meatloaf in there, but I mean, come on. You can't get the cheese off there, dishwasher? That's one of my big beefs in the world. Why can't dishwashers take on a full, you know, a little bit of food on a plate? What is it always, what do you have to do the work for it? And anyway, I'm digressing, but if you're like me and you leave a little bit of food, just a little bit on the plate, then it will always find a way on your Glencairn glass and you won't see it when you put the dishes up and then you go to taste and you're like, shit, is that a piece of my taco in my Glencairn? So, little word to the wise, always rinse, rinse, rinse. Even if you don't use soap, rinsing is the winner. But hey, that's this week's Above the Char, or rather long Above the Char because I went off on my dishwasher tangent, but hey, that's what we do here on Bourbon Pursuit. We go off on tangents. But that's going to do it for this week. A big shout out to Michael Carton for the great idea. If you have an idea for Above the Char, make sure you hit me up on fredminnick.com. That's fredminnick.com. And let me know your idea. Just hit the contact button. Until next week, cheers.
From their bar to yours, Chad and Sarah of the popular YouTube channel It's Bourbon Night bring you their favorite at-home old-fashioned mix with the new Elemental Elixirs Golden Hour Syrup. It's a custom-made syrup with notes of bold black tea, warm spices, and orange zest. All you need is your favorite whiskey and ice. No bitters needed. One bottle makes 16 drinks, so that's only $1 cocktail before you add your own whiskey. They can also be enjoyed in other cocktails or spirits, mocktails, coffee, tea, and anything you can think of. It's crafted locally in Lexington, Kentucky, and you can get your bottle now at whiskeyambitions.com. It's that time of the year where everybody started to make their vacation plans on visiting Kentucky, the mecca of bourbon. And if you are coming to Kentucky, you need to make sure you visit us at Pursuit Spirits in Louisville. We're right in the heart of Clifton, near Butchertown and Nulu, and only just a few miles away from downtown Louisville. But when you do come, you need to book your experience to go do our whole shebang. This is the one that's really the star of the show. You get a full-on tasting. You get to do your own personal barrel selection experience. And you get to grab a whiskey thief and fill your bottle directly from the barrel. We're doing something completely brand new that nobody else is doing here in Bourbon Country. Plus, you get a free sweet tasting glass at the end of it. I guarantee you, you're going to end up being one of the many people that's also leaving us a 5-star review. So make sure you come and check us out. You can book your reservation by going to pursuitspirits.com and clicking the Visit Us button.
It's that time again to get bourbon strong with Give270. Purchase your $50 tickets for your chance to win from our 50 bourbon prizes. Don't miss out on rare bottles and grand prizes like the legendary Pappy Set, a Weller Rainbow, and the Blood Oath Trilogy. Hurry, only 3,000 tickets are available. Single bottle winners go back in for the grand prize draw. Will you win the ultimate Pappy Set or one of our other incredible prizes? Get your tickets now at Give270.org. Charitable gaming license ORG 0002703.
Welcome back to the episode of Bourbon Pursuit, the official podcast of bourbon. Kenny and Fred here today talking about MGP. Now, this is a three-letter acronym that Midwest Grain Products that maybe people don't know about. And that's what it stands for. It used to be called LDI. It's had a long history. And in that history, it's always been known for one thing, and that's been supplying the goods of whiskey to pretty much anybody out there that's either started a company or getting ready to start or trying to transition from, you know, source market into their own distillate. So I'm kind of excited to kind of see exactly what our guest is going to be talking about of how they're going to be start building brands, because traditionally it hasn't been their forte or their, you know, what they've been known to do in the whiskey world.
That's right, Kenny. In fact, originally it was a Seagram's plant. And when Seagram's went out of business in 2000, that company got divided up, you know, between Pernod Ricard and what is now known as Diageo, and a few other things got acquired here and there. And that plant was purchased by Pernod Ricard. And, you know, the brands were actually, you know, like Crown Royal purchased by Diageo. And so Pernod Ricard was producing liquid that would be used into blends. And they put a lot of effort into like the RTD market in places like Australia. And taxes started changing. And Pernod Ricard looked at it as like, you know what, this isn't making us a lot of money. So we're going to sell it to Angostura's parent company, CL Financial, and that was LDI, and that was Lawrenceburg Distillers, Indiana. Ridiculous name, by the way.
And it's almost like there's no mystery there.
Huh? Yeah, I mean, it's just like, I mean, who came up with that name? And then it was like CL Financial kind of got caught up in a real global economic issue, and they end up selling to MGP Ingredients. Now, while LDI had it, it was kind of like this mystery to a lot of people. When MGP acquired it, they allowed me to come in and do a pretty extensive story. That was in 2013, and a lot has changed since then. So I'm excited to, you know, talk about that, talk about the old days, but also talk about what's new with MGP.
For sure. And there's a good little history nugget there for anybody that needs to know more about MGP, because I'm sure that anybody, if you're listening to Bourbon Podcast, odds are you understand these acronyms, or if you're just getting into it, you're going to have a better understanding of what MGP is and the history and what they've been doing and what they're actually now trying to do and start, you know, market their own brand. So it's going to be really interesting to kind of talk about it. So with that, let's go ahead and introduce our guest. So today we have Andy Mancini. He is the Vice President of Brands for MGP. Andy, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, appreciate it.
So this is something that we're always starting to try a little bit differently. So we're going to kind of start with a random icebreaker today. So just to kind of get to know you a little bit better, if you were to travel anywhere, knowing that there was a chance you'd have to stay there for up to a year, where would it be?
Oh, that's easy. It would be Italy.
Italy?
Absolutely. Now,
yeah. So the name already plays into it.
Well, yeah. I mean, my background, my great-grandparents immigrated actually twice back and forth from Italy to America. And rumor has it that my grandfather was, if he wasn't born on the boat, it was just about right after they docked. But no, my career actually started in wine. And when I was at Brown-Forman, I really had the honor of running all of our imported and international wine brands. And I spent a good amount of time over the years in Italy. And in fact, you know, the irony, although a little sad, was 9/11, we were opening up a new portion of our Bola winery when 9/11 hit, and ended up spending 2 weeks in Italy trying to get most of my team back to the United States. And even in that time, how bad it was, you know, the Italian people are just kind and gentle and appreciative. And you know, if I had to have been stuck anywhere, right? You know, most people want a desert island or Caribbean island, but I pretty much enjoyed being in Italy that whole time.
I knew it was either going to be Italy or Spain, because we did that fantastic sherry tasting, you know, 5-6 years ago, a while back. But I knew it was going to be in Europe somewhere for you.
Yeah. Well, I'm kind of an old world guy, but
Is there a particular city in Italy that you really hone in on?
Well, it's interesting. There are parts of Italy I still haven't been to. I have not been down south. I haven't been to the Amalfi Coast. But, in terms of where I've been, I really like the Veneto. The diversity of wines there and food are incredible. I really like, Tuscany, not just because of the Chianti and the Brunellos, but, again, the history, the culture, the food is really incredible. But, Italy is still, a very kind of regional country, right? And you, when you cross the borders, you do see the difference, right? I think one thing that connects everybody in Italy are the people. It just, really genuine.
Great.
It's all good. But I really appreciate you guys having me. I've been really looking forward to this. And, I wanted to maybe just build on what Fred was saying for just a couple of seconds here. The history of MGP, and it was originally Midwest Grain Products, we were founded in 1941 by Cloud Cray Sr. And his granddaughter is, Karen Seberg is currently our chairman of the board. But, it was founded actually during the war to distill torpedo propellant. So, the distilling of MGP has been very long. And, they built their strength over the years, right, with industrial alcohol, pharmaceutical alcohol, right? So with COVID, we've had to ramp up our capacity at both Lawrenceburg and in Atchison to help with the supply chain. But, in 2011, the company was able to purchase LDI, the old Seagram's plant, and really start what I would call the other half of distilling, right? Move from white goods, to whiskeys. And in that time, in those, 9 years, a lot of reinvestment and capital and, distilling more and filling more barrels and filling more warehouses.
Never stopped.
That's right. Yeah. And it's been exciting. Mm-hmm. We're learning every day. We've got a great team. The one thing that really is a hallmark of MGP is our culture. It's very collegial. It's very collaborative. And when we talk about teams, we really mean it. We have a team of distillers and we have a team of blenders and, we all work together to produce the best product. And as you both know, our core business is still sourcing, right? And, when we were working with customers, the distilling team is there, right? And the blending team is there. And I think that's what really helps the reputation, the image of MGP. It's because we're all pulling in the same direction.
So we'll touch on that in a minute and get into that. I kind of want to roll back a little bit because, Italy wines, you've had a background with, you mentioned before we started recording here, of being in the importing business as well as Brown-Forman. So let's kind of talk about really where you came from and kind of how you got to your position at MGP and really what kind of catapulted or spearheaded that movement.
I guess my beverage alcohol journey started back when I was in college at the University of Virginia. And one of the papers I wrote was Europe on 3 liters a day, drinking your way through Europe.
Okay. And, we can do that.
And I'm of a certain age, but back in the old days, the University of Virginia was known as a party school. And
is that why you chose to go there?
Well, a couple reasons, but
it's maybe the top five.
Yeah. But, there's the old rumor that, Playboy magazine used to rank the top party schools in the country. And there was always an asterisk at the bottom and says, we didn't include the University of Virginia because we don't rank professionals. I was actually writing this paper. It was a combination of history and public policy. And I thought it would be fun because back then, they had all these books on, Europe on $2 a day and things like that. And who cares? It's at our age and your young 20s, you're thinking about other things. But I've always had this fascination first with wine. My grandparents, being Italian and being from the earth is, as they say. And so I actually started studying wines when I was in high school. My dad used to let me drag him down to DC and Georgetown. There was an incredible wine store, liquor store called Eagle Liquor. It doesn't exist anymore, but the owner was my Boy Scout leader. So he would let us sneak into the back and sample some wines. And I really had a lot of fun with it. And
Boy Scouts has changed over the years, hasn't
it? That's right. Yeah. Yeah. But we did it responsibly, right? But, you know, as I used to say, you got to be prepared for Thanksgiving dinner, right?
Yeah, there you go.
You know, but we
keep in mind he is Italian.
Yeah. So it's genetic.
Yeah.
But my wife and I were married, we were married in Chicago. And one of the hallmarks of my life is it doesn't matter what happens, every major moment is in a recession. I graduated from high school and college and graduate school in a recession, got married in a recession. But my wife and I were actually having brunch one day, and I said, you know, I'd like to become a winemaker. And she looked at me and was like, no, that's not going to happen.
Idea. Yeah. Terrible idea.
No, we have a mortgage. You know, we're not picking up. We're not, you know, not moving to California. You know, think of something else. And I actually got a call from a friend of a friend that was working at a newly out of bankrupt brewery called Heilemann Brewing. They were headquartered in La Crosse, Wisconsin. And for those who are into beer, back in the 70s, Heilemann was this national brewer of regional brands, everything under $5 a case, right? So Henry Weinhart, Iron City, Old Style. They moved their headquarters to Chicago, and I joined that team, and it was great. We were able to turn around, you know, Old Style and do a few other things and have some fun and support the Cubs. And we had a great time. And along that way, I got a call from Brown-Forman. And as they say, the rest is history. I mean, I spent well over a decade there and had the opportunity to work on every single wine brand. And, you know, with not only in Italy, but we did a joint venture in France, a joint venture in Australia. Along the way, you know, the company purchased Sonoma Cutrer, and I got to work with Terry Adams, the world famous winemaker there. And we had a great time. And so it really, beverage alcohol has always been in my blood. I mean, I think for me, it has always been sort of the history and the culture that surrounds the product that's always been fascinating to me. And whiskey is no different, right? I mean, when we, you know, we're sitting here in Louisville, Kentucky, sort of the Mecca, right? The Mecca of whiskeys. And you think about the history and the heritage, not only of the personalities, but sort of why and how, you know, the product came to be, which is, right, an agricultural product. And you don't sell all your grain, or you can't, you know, you can't store it, it's going to go bad. What do you do with it, right? Well, you mash it up, right?
Make some whiskey, I guess.
You make some whiskey, yeah. And so 4 years ago, our just recently retired CEO, Gus Griffin, who we're friends and acquaintances, peers at Brown-Forman, reached out to me and said, you know, hey, we've really been thinking hard about building a brand portfolio and, you know, like to talk to you about it. And again, very fortunate that ended up that I joined MGP at the end of 2016, right at the end of 2016. And so
that wasn't a recession year though.
No.
Hold
true.
On.
That's one, true. That's
one major
true.
Life
that's
event
true.
That was.
That's true. Yeah, that's right. You're right, Fred. The one time. But so, you know, the last 3.5-4 years have been just a real fast paced, you know, activity of, you know, building our portfolio. So the first question really is, you know, why would MGP do that? Right. And,
you just took the words out of my mouth.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, here's the reality is that, you know, MGP is really, really successful in the food ingredients business because of all those grains that we mill, and we were able to separate the proteins and the starches and the flours and produce product for, you know, for the food industry. And of course, you know, we're world famous on our sourcing. But one of the things that the board had not noticed, but they were realizing and they were seeing that a lot of the brands, craft brands that we had worked, you know, with the owners on and had helped them develop were exiting for a lot of money, you know, and they're like, well, how do we capture more of that value, right? I mean, it's our distillate and we're working hard and, you know, we should think about, you know, entering the branded space.
Let's go ahead and give a little bit of kind of a qualifier there. Let's talk about some of those brands. We're talking High West sold for $140 million, you know, basically using y'all's rye whiskey. We're talking Smooth Ambler that sold for a mint to Pernod Ricard. You know, so people did build their brands on the backs of MGP's whiskey. And so I'm imagining that conversation had to be, you know, very unique because you're like,
Wait a minute. How'd this happen?
Like, where's our cut?
Well, I think what was happening is certainly with the explosion, as we all know, of the cocktail culture, the explosion of craft beer, craft whiskey, you know, there's an opportunity there. And we needed to, you know, we needed to look at it and take advantage of the opportunity if it made sense for MGP. And look, you know, the brands you've mentioned, Fred, I mean, the owners, the entrepreneurs who started that were really smart and really good, right? And the impetus has really been, you know, it's their image and their idea. And yeah, we're supporting them with really great juice. And so the challenge for us was, if we've got that really good juice, how do we build our own brands? And so so what we have set out to do is really to leverage our authenticity and our provenance, Lawrenceburg, Atchison, Kansas, to build and to grow a portfolio that we think will be meaningful for today's consumers. I mean, you know, a rising tide does lift all boats, right? As the craft industry grows, but you know, you have to stand on your own merits, and you have to do it right in order to be successful, not just, you know, leverage a name. So what, go ahead.
No, I mean, Fred, I kind of want to ask you one question here, because, you know, when you talked about the High West and the Smooth Amblers and everybody else that had been gobbled up basically based on their ingredients, I mean, it's the same thing as like you writing a book, me taking it, putting my name on it and selling, be like, hey, this was all me. And, you know, maybe written by Fred and some footnotes, right?
Yeah.
So what do you think goes into the minds of Pernod Ricard and other big companies that are buying at people based upon MGP quality when they have a distillery that's in the process or, you know, starting to blend or something like that, but it actually hasn't been proven yet?
Right, right.
It's kind of like a misnomer and kind of like a huge gamble by some of these companies.
Yeah, and you could argue it doesn't make any sense. But what I have learned in the spirits business, which is very different than the wine business, is that it's built on the brand. Like, they're more, the spirits industry is more about creating a brand and a bottle that, you know, that stands out, you know, more so than the liquid. There's no better example of this than Grey Goose, you know, great. And it's vodka, so you're not going to hear me talk positively too much about vodka. But the fact is they took some, you know, little known, wasn't selling for anything French vodka, and put it in a fancy glass and gave it a backstory, and boom, you know, it's the brand everybody, you know, looked up to. The same with, you know, Tito's, you know, it's similar there. But you look at the branding of something like High West, and at the time of growth, you know, when they had sold to Constellation didn't have anything in their portfolio that they could go and, you know, market in areas that they needed to market to. So like there's an entire shelf space of their wine, but when they're having the greater portfolio discussions, Brown-Forman's boxing them out in the spirits area. And so if by having like Constellation, even though the liquid was not necessarily their own, they had a brand that had awards, that had recognition, that had a reputation, and suddenly they're on that shelf, and then they add to it. And so all they're looking for a shelf space and a brand. And at the end of the day, you know, the majority of the consumers don't know anything about the people that they're sourcing the whiskey from, and they don't know about the base quality of it. All they see is that double gold or that award on the bottle, and then boom. So that's what they're basically buying, is they're buying that past earned branding to compete, you know, on the shelf.
And you brought up another thing about awards. I guess Andy is a when you see everybody else getting awards for y'all's whiskey, does he piss you off too? And you're like,
no, come on. It's not about, I mean, look, there's always going to be healthy competition. But, you know, it makes us proud. I mean, if our whiskey is, you know, is gaining, you know, notoriety and accolades, I mean, that's great. I mean, you know, again, our core business is still sourcing, right? And so when people like Dave Perkins, who founded High West, mm-hmm. also a University of Virginia graduate, I might
oh,
add.
Oh, really? Yeah.
You got to admire it. I mean, Fred is absolutely right that the spirits world is based on brands. And I think there are a couple of theories for that. I mean, I spent 20 plus years in the wine industry, right? And it's still an incredibly generic business, right? Mm-hmm. You walk into a bar, you will order, you know, a Jack or a George Remus or a Grey Goose. You go into a bar or restaurant, you order what's your house white, what's your house red? And it is, I mean, those are chasms apart. And, mm-hmm. and you know, I love the wine business, but it's really hard, you know, it's for people to think about. They think of Pinot Grigio as a brand, right? It happens to be a grape. But I think, you know, I think what was a great motivator for us was the fact that, the Lincoln Hendersons and the Dave Perkins of the world and the Smooth Amblers of the world were having great success. And so it gave us confidence to say, you know, maybe we can do this as well. I mean, it kind of makes sense, right? When Toyota, you know, has been really successful, you know, with, you know, their Corolla, maybe they should dip their toe in the water and compete with BMW and Audi with a Lexus, right? And that was our mission, is not to replicate our customers, but to find the white space and the stories and fulfill the needs of whiskey and beverage alcohol consumers, spirits consumers that may not be met. And so our mission really was to leverage our distilling capabilities as well as our blending expertise and put those against the brands that we were going to build.
I remember when you guys came out with your brands, you had acquired George Remus from the Cincinnati Entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And I remember, you know, and don't take this the wrong way, but I remember feeling like it was a huge miss. Like when you guys came out of the gate, because your liquid is so good, I felt like coming out of the gate, you all, I felt like didn't take advantage of the market as well as you could have. And it's definitely caught up. But I remember looking at it and in the retail world being like, okay, what do we do with this? Like there was not a grand acceptance in the retail space and the on-premise space of you all coming to the market. If anything, I saw confusion from people. Has that changed? Are you seeing more acceptance now than when you all first started in the market?
You know, that's a great question, Fred. Let me maybe peel back a few things. You know, I think I think certainly today, sort of 3 years after we purchased and relaunched Remus, there's been a lot of change, right? I mean, our depletion growth every year is in, you know, the high double digits. And, you know, the thing that's important though is that we took a very deliberate, in fact, what we call a narrow and deep approach. I mean, even today after 3 years, we're only in 16 markets. Okay. So we're not national. And our
mission, and that's by design.
By design. Okay. Right. So while we're distilling for the world, right, you know, we also weren't arrogant enough to assume that we can just say, hey, we're MGP and just, you know, spread ourselves out and have success. So we've really been focused on learning as we go, learning from our mistakes, learning from our successes, and applying those to our successive and our future markets. I think a couple of things. I think it takes a little bit of time to get traction, right? I mean, mm-hmm. It's rare that any brand, you know, you flip the switch and it's an overnight success. And so we've been pushing the rock uphill a little bit. But I think with, you know, when we purchased Remus from Queen City, you know, they were great young entrepreneurs, couldn't necessarily afford, you know, the aged bourbons mm-hmm. like they wanted to. So, you know, we were able to immediately improve the liquid, right? We moved to 6.5-year, 7-year. Liquid. We were able to blend our 21 and 36% bourbon there. And then really in the same year when we launched, we were able to release our Series 1 of Repeal Reserve, which were our aged, you know, which is really designed to be a true blending exercise, right? A palate challenger. And, mm-hmm. and we only use our oldest reserves for that. And, you know, and it took a little bit for the trade and distributors to sort of pick up and continue along. I mean, we get questions all the time. It's like, well, I know it's your brand, but I know you're MGP, but what's your brand? Or I know it's your brand, but did you buy from MGP? And we do need to continue to tell people that we are MGP and these are our brands. And we do distill, you know, for other brands as well. But, you know, it's fun to be out there competing. I mean, I think we're, you know, our distributors certainly are seeing it. And what's interesting is that as we continue to grow and gain traction, people are coming to us. I mean, we're every week I get calls like, hey, when are you coming to this state? Or, hey, I'm this retailer in this market. You know, I'd love to buy your brands. How do we get there? So it's last point I'll make is, you know, and we've all been in this industry a long time. Although, you know, Jack Daniels is 150, 170 years old, you know, even Mr. Jack probably had to start by pushing a few barrels, you know, early in the years.
Sure.
And it just takes time for us. But we're patient. We're not looking to exit this business at any time. It's a permanent piece of the MGP platform.
So a question that I kind of want to go with is, when you were looking at even building the brands, I'm sure when you got that phone call and says like, hey, come and help us to try to figure out a portfolio, what was the idea of let's go acquire something versus let's build something from the ground up?
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. And with Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. And you can get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/bourbon, all lowercase, and go to shopify.com/bourbon to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/bourbon. If you're anything like me, then you can't get enough about bourbon. And that's why I'm a subscriber to Bourbon Plus magazine. Bourbon Plus is a quarterly publication that tells the stories from the heart of bourbon, the farmers who grow the grain, the distillers who labor over the process, and the people, like you and me, who raise their glasses to celebrate it all. Subscribe to Bourbon Plus magazine today at bourbonplus.com, that's PLUS.com, and use code PURSUIT at checkout for $5 off your subscription.
What was the idea of let's go acquire something versus let's build something from the ground up?
So when we look at the world of spirits, all right, and try to figure out, you know, our approach, one of the first strategies, I actually stated this to the board and to investors, is that we are going to compete in every category in which we distill. So that's vodka. Sorry, Fred. It's gin.
Hey, there's money to be made. You got to do it.
I mean, we're the largest domestic gin distiller. I mean, so we got to be in gin. We're going to be in bourbon. It's, you know, 23 million case category. And we're kind of known for rye, right? We're one of the largest rye distillers also. And so we were going to be in rye as well. So those have been sort of the four categories in which we have targeted. And as opposed to just sort of like, you know, just sort of, you know, shotgunning everything out there, we've really taken a lot of time to do a lot of research, to talk to consumers, to talk to the trade. And one of the things we fell into pretty early is that when you're talking to consumers and when you're looking at where the opportunities are, you know, there's kind of buy versus build going on. And I think to Fred, to your comment about the purchase of George Remus, that was one where it was a great concept. I mean, it was a really good story behind it. And George Remus happened to steal from actually the Seagram, you know, back then it was the Rossville distillery, but, you know, he stole barrels from our very own warehouses. He was headquartered in Cincinnati, which is, you know, right near, you know, 20 miles east of Lawrenceburg. So we felt that there was an opportunity there, right? So we could take that.
Kind of like get back at him a little bit.
Well, we could take that story, right? And we could make it bigger. We could build a brand around that. And we've had some fun with it. And, you know, we, you know, with the main line at 94, the fourth release coming in August of Repeal Reserve, the bottled and bond 14-year-old Volstead that we were able to release last year. Now, all of this sort of surrounds the whole Prohibition and the Art Deco era. And we think that there's a lot of stories and there's a lot of traction there, a lot of road we can hoe around that. You know, when it came to Till Vodka, you know, that was our first foray. And Atchison is a, you know, huge distiller of our white goods. You know, the story of Till is very simple. Is the on the grounds where our distillery is in Atchison, Kansas, it was a hardware store back in the 1800s. Farmers used to buy their plows and their till and their seeds from that location. So we wanted to honor that. We got a lot of questions, you know, in late 2017 about, well, you know, why'd you launch with a bourbon? You're a rye, you know, you're a rye distillery. Why don't you?
We need that 95.5.
Yeah, right.
Everybody loves.
Yeah. Why didn't you do that? And the answer is because we really wanted to do it right. We were really researching and thinking about, you know, what makes the best rye. I know we distill the best rye, but what would be an MGP rye? And so we went back to our roots. Rossville is the original name of the distillery, founded in 1847. We know that for over 211 years, people have been distilling rye on our property, mainly because of the Miami Aquifer, which sits on, we sit on top of. And, you know, that 50, 52 degree water, pure as anything, you know, helps when you don't have, you know, stainless steel, you know, coils and, you know, refrigerated, you know, jacketed tank.
You have one other thing that adds to your terroir, and that's the puffs of smoke coming from that casino right down the road.
Absolutely. That's AGS, right? That's right. Oh my God. Just, you know, if you don't like the yolk, just try the smoke, right? Yeah. So
that's a good line right there.
Yeah. But we worked really hard on Rossville and we listened. And, you know, the thing is, you notice that, you know, when we came out with Remus, it was just one SKU, and then we added a second. The trade was telling us, look, you guys know what you're doing with rye, you know, challenge the palate. And so that's why we came out with Mastercraft at 94, and we came out with the cast strength, with the barrel proof, right, about 112.6.
Now you're tugging at the heartstrings of the listeners.
Yeah, and you know, both of those, by the way, we use a combination of our 95 and our 51 ryes, but they're different. And so we're not just taking the standard barrel and slamming them together. We're literally picking barrels for Mastercraft and picking barrels for barrel proof and then blending it. Again, go back to our mission, right? Our distilling capabilities and our blending expertise. And then tell the story, right? Tell the story of George Ross. Tell the story of the Miami Aquifer. And let people, you know, judge for themselves.
I'll say this about your rye. I don't believe there's ever been a distillery that, you know, set the standard of a palate, you know, for a particular product like you all did from, you know, 2007 to 2014. If you think about this, Kentucky distillers were not making rye, but maybe one day a month. Most of them were, you know, two or three times a year. And the fact is, when all those people were coming in and acquiring your stocks and slapping their backstories and their labels on and talking about how their grandpappy's recipe happens to be the exact same as MGP's.
What a coincidence.
Yeah, I mean, amazing coincidence. Yeah. You know, everybody was grabbing that rye, and that rye became what people thought rye was supposed to taste like. And people from Pennsylvania and Kentucky and Maryland and Canada were like, well, actually, no, we have our own style. We have our own style. So your distillery gave birth to the new age of rye. And that is an amazing story. The unfortunate part is that everyone's always like, well, it's sourced. And then, of course, Templeton doesn't put their state of distillation on there, and they get sued, and it leads to a whole bunch of other things. But the real beauty of this story is that you all created the rye movement with the liquid. Other people branded it and sold it, but I think that gets really lost in the conversation of rye's return is how you all define the category.
Well, thank you for that compliment. I appreciate that. You know, one of the things that just, I know there's always the back and forth about, you know, how pejorative sourcing, you know, the word and term sourcing is. But, you know, here in Kentucky, it's known by another name, right? It's known as trading. It's known as borrowing, right?
I know. if people only knew how much, you know, something like, you know, barrels of Brown-Forman are actually in, you know, at another distillery. If people only knew, and I've talked about it, but, and this is why, like, God, I'm going on another dadgum tangent here, but.
Here we go.
Bring it back.
Brace yourself.
But, you know, you come from wine. You know, I have a strong background in wine. You know, sommeliers, they can tell you what hill every single vine is on because that information is public. There's no dadgum transparency about the transfer of barrels. You know, you have all these great Willett picks, you know, and they're just like, are you like, where is it from? It's a Kentucky bourbon. Okay, cool. But what distillery? It's a Kentucky bourbon. And Kenny, you're facing this now as you're now a merchant bottler. You know, you're coming across these NDAs all the time where you can't say where something's from.
You want to be transparent as you can, but sometimes they just don't let you. I don't know.
Well, you know, we're going to be as transparent. You know, we're always going to be transparent. You know, we're bound by NDAs as well. You know, I mean, from a sourcing standpoint. But you know, Fred, just to finish on the sourcing thing. You know, the thing that sort of always makes me laugh is, you know, people who buy wine are buying sourced and blended all the time, right?
From the co-ops.
Negociant, right? Yeah. What is a negociant? He buys barrels of wine and he makes it the way he thinks people, you know, want it to taste. So,
very accepted in the wine world too, by the way.
Absolutely. So, you know,
cherished even.
And it's been going on, this is in spirits and whiskey, it's been going on forever. And I think we need to get over ourselves a little bit, right? And accept the fact that if you like a flavor, a taste, a style, or a grain, there's something out there for you.
Well, to the point of like, you know, the fact is that whiskey now has an audience that just cares. And, you know, if I were you or the company, I wouldn't look at, you know, when you see these threads coming up on Reddit, take it as a compliment. It's like, you know what, these people care enough to, you know, to bitch about us, you know? So that's how I take it anyway.
No, you're absolutely right. I'll tell you a quick story, and it's relevant and it's contemporary. So, under great suggestion from the trade and from consumers, we initiated our very first single barrel program, and we'll be releasing in August and September single barrels of George Remus at cask strength, and single barrels of Rossville Union at bottled and bond. And so we're basically deconstructing, right? Where mm-hmm. you can take 21%, you can take 36%, you can take 51%. We didn't do 95 this year, but we have three variations of 51% rye that the trade could taste through. And when we launched this, it was going to be a short window. And the one time we've had really great luck is we literally ended the program about 4 minutes before COVID hit. I mean, it was just the day that we ended the sales, the next day, you know, everybody was shutting down. But I got a couple calls from my guys and out in other markets, and they're like, Andy, we got a small problem. And I'm like, what's going on? They go, well, we got some people out there who are selling their barrels, and they're claiming it's MGP as well. So, you know, you got MGP brands selling MGP barrels, and you got other people calling, you know, and saying, well, these are MGP barrels. And it, you know, it creates a little bit of confusion.
Like Boone County. Like, I picked a Boone County MGP barrel before. Is that what you mean? Yeah.
Maybe, you know. But you know, we're continuing to push and build the MGP brand's name. And as, you know, We know and we're thankful that the MGP name opens all doors, and we're grateful for that. But
it's amazing when you think about it, because in 2013 it sure in the hell shut them.
Yeah, that's right.
Now it's
it's good. But you know, we still, I mean, on the brand side, we still have to earn our keep, right? We still have to prove that the brands will sell, right? They'll pull off the shelf, and you know, the distributors still expect us to have some velocity. And you know, so it, you know, the name only goes so far, but I think, you know, with our pedigree and with our heritage, you know, we've got the wind at our back, and, you know, we'll be able to continue to scale the business.
I know you got some I know you've got your rapid fire questions coming in.
Yeah, always got them. They're in the back of my mind.
I know you got them. But what happened? So you guys are so heavily reliant upon sourcing. You've seen an increased competition from Bardstown Bourbon Company. Now you've got Brown-Forman, who has gotten rid of one of their brands to probably open up some of their contract distillation. A lot of competition out there. I mean, what happens when your biggest customer, you know, if, you know, they pull away, you know, what do you guys do if you guys lose some of that, lose some of those, you know, I guess, really good contract distillation programs?
Well, sounds like room for more labels.
Yeah. Well, you know,
more barrel picks.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But you know, my good friend and colleague David Dykstra is the one who leads
David,
the
sort of,
yeah. And you know, David and his team are, you know, are really good at what they do. And you know, they have been able to be broad and deep, you know, in this industry, right? Not just multinationals, but you know, a good size share of the craft industry. And you know, we evolve as the industry evolves, right? We used to have high minimums, now we have low minimums, now we offer totes. I mean, we're trying to be a provider of answers, not just a provider of juice, right? So, you know, we welcome the competition. I mean, it, you know, again, rising tide lifts all boats. And I think this is gonna, you know, certainly back to the other comment about sourcing, if everyone's doing it, then it's okay, right? And I think it's going to democratize the use of barrels and whiskey. And I think it's gonna put the pressure on brands to perform, right? Higher quality, more transparency, you know, and also help educate consumers on what the product is. But you know, again, I think this is, you know, this is a very old and a continuously growing, you know, industry and category. And I think that, you know, we're ready, you know, we're ready for the next challenge.
What's the money warehouse? Because you guys have some amazing, you know, aluminum skin warehouses, and you got the old rock warehouses. That's what everybody wants to know right now. What's the money warehouse?
And are you taking those money warehouses, those money barrels for your own brands?
I sort of have to compete with the distilling team just as much as everybody else, right? But we're blessed that we were able to secure and keep some of the best and some of the oldest for the brands. But you know, It's interesting. We do a lot of research on the condition of our barrels and condition of our warehouses. And, you know, I think the first thing is that we do benefit in Lawrenceburg from where we are versus, I would say, someone who is south of Lawrenceburg, you know, in the 502 area code or something.
Already, you know? He's dropping it now. He's bringing it.
No, but you know, but think about it. I mean, you think about, we're on the banks of the Ohio River, right? We are in a much more humid climate. And it just so happens that, you know, our warehouses are brick and pretty thick, and we're separated by concrete floors. So immediately, right, versus your traditional rick house, which is vertical, right? Walk in on the first floor and look up 100, you know, 50 feet, and you can see eight or nine levels. You walk into one of our warehouses and you're seeing a floor, which is its own warehouse, its own rick house. It's only six barrels high. And so each one of these, our floors of our warehouse, are their own aging chamber. And because of brick and because of the humidity, you know, it takes longer for it to get hot in the summer and longer for it to get cold in the winter. And so the humidity and the construction really provides a moderating force. And we think that it mellows out our whiskeys just a little bit better.
So when Bourbon Pursuit comes to do a barrel pick, which warehouse are we going to? Is that
just
wrong?
Yeah, you just keep poking it. He'll.
I love it.
He'll shout out a letter at some point.
Yeah. You know, okay, so I'll tell you, let's go back to the barrel pick program for this year. We must have pulled, the blending team must have pulled, I don't know, let's call it 500 barrels. And we tasted through and tested all of them. You'd be surprised, even with the age, you know, we were selling between 4 and 6 year old barrels. We didn't tell about it. But by the way, we didn't tell anyone what the age was. It was all about taste. We would tell them what the mash bill was, and it was up to the buyers to make their own decisions. But we had a pretty tight band on proof. You know, I mean, it's, it wasn't going from, you know, 119 to 175 or 135. I mean, we were, you know, our entry proof happens to be 120 on everything, but we were, you know, we were pretty tight band on the proofing. So, you know, again, I think that's helped support the mellow, you know, and the humidity and all of that, and helps us, I think, you know, with the aging process.
So one thing you kind of triggered me there, we're talking about like going out and figuring out like the 500 barrels to go at your mark. What's it look like forecasting, knowing that you've got salespeople out there that are like, okay, we've got inventory, like start selling. And then you've got to come in and be like, hold on, no, I need X amount for this X amount of years. And so make sure that we aren't selling every single bit of our stocks.
We actually, every month, we review our inventories, our input and our output. And what David and his team do is they have one exercise, and I and my team have the same exercise, and we're looking at forecasting all the time. And we're also, you know, combining that with, we're basically looking to our cloudy crystal ball and saying in 10 years, you know, we're going to need this many cases of 12 or 14 year old versus this many cases of 7 or 8 year old. And yeah, it's a real complex, you know, math that we're trying to run to try to figure out what the right thing is. But, you know, we also have our customers and when they're pulling and when they're adding and then new customers, and it's kind of fun. You know, it's
sounds like a crazy Excel spreadsheet to me.
It is. It's pretty crazy, but you know, it's what we do, you know? And of course, then you have to measure, you have to layer in, you know, at any point, you know, what mash bill are we distilling? What do our customers want? So it makes for a lot of fun, which is why the team approach is so important, right? You know, Mike Templin, who's our general manager and a master distiller in Lawrenceburg, you know, his entire team are constantly working with the barrel house team and working with us and working with customer service and working with Dykstra's team to make sure that, you know, we're kind of within that band of getting it right.
And so as we start kind of wrapping up here in the podcast, I kind of want you to give you a moment to kind of like plug, you know, the brands and everything that you are building, as well as releases and everything like that on the horizon.
Sure. I mean, just be commercially crass, right? Just
sure. You know, here's your 2-minute pitch.
Okay. So let me finish off the Compete Where We Distill. In March, again, about 2 hours before COVID, we just completed the purchase of New Columbia Distillers in Washington, D.C. And their brand is Green Hat Gin. We are,
and you pick up the rye too, right? You got the rye.
Yeah, you got the rye. Yeah, right. Yes, that's
because in your press release, you don't need to know all the inner workings of my brain, but I remember getting the press release. They didn't mention the rye. Why didn't you mention the rye?
Yeah. Anyway, so you're familiar with Green Hat, then? Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Michael Lowe and John Usselton are great people. In fact, John joined us. He's now our regional director, sales director in D.C. and Maryland. We're launching Green Hat actually this summer in Kansas, because it's our home market and we always do that. But, come early 21, we'll be launching in all of our other markets with Green Hat. The other thing to let everybody know is that, we are releasing the, Repeal Reserve Series 4. We're really excited about this. It's really two mash bills. Both of them are 12 years old. Don't get me wrong. I can't remember that. We always put the mash bill blend on the front label, but I think
I always admired, by the way.
Thank you.
I saw that. Remember the first Remus bottle that I got, and you know, it literally lists all the MGP mash bills right there.
Yeah.
And I think even part of the percentage of the blend that's in there too.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's like 76%. They're both 2008. So it's, I think 76% is 21 and the rest is 36%. But yeah, that was conscious when we did it because we didn't want that shroud of secrecy. We wanted to let people know this is what we're doing and this is why we're doing it. Because every series release is really about the palate, right? We want you know, in a good way to challenge the palate. Do you like it? Do you not? I mean, another quick story. Our very first release was 94 proof. And that was the biggest criticism we received. It was like, guys, if you're going to, you know, do a special release, make it at least 100 proof. And people were right. So, you know, now it's 100 proof. And
listen to the buyer.
You know, it's all right. That's what we got to do. We're really excited about the barrels. We've got the Rossville Union barrels coming in September. We got the George Remus barrels coming in August. We're going to do the program again in January. So if you guys are interested, let me know.
The Bourbon Pursuit barrel picks in September. In what warehouse again? I forgot, Kenny.
I'm going to be there when you guys come up. So it'll all be good.
We'll make it happen.
Yeah.
And this will be the Patreon community. This will be the first barrel pick I come to.
There you go.
So good. All right.
Looking forward to that one.
Yeah.
Now.
Excited about this. What? I think it was Warehouse Q. Was it Q?
Or it could be G, whatever you want.
I think it was Q.
We'll let him know. We'll let everybody else know when it's off the air and he lets us, really fills us in there. Yeah.
I get lost on campus. I mean, I stay in the yellow lines. I mean, I do what I'm told but it's pretty cool when you can just look up at history and see all those.
Yeah. I mean, gorgeous. having been there and, gotten to roam around with my camera back in the day, before you all had rules. I actually was the
for safety.
Damn rules.
For safety.
it was really cool. It is kind of like I liken MGP a little bit to Buffalo Trace in terms of like its old timiness. Like they have a lot of old equipment there. It's really beautiful. It really is. It's a good time.
Well, you're welcome anytime you want.
Hey, no. Listen, you can put a cot in your warehouse queue. I can stay the night. Just give me a whiskey thief.
A little Airbnb, maybe.
We're good.
Hey, a little side hustle.
This is good. I mean, there's a lot of people that are doing it now. Why not?
I don't want the light whiskey warehouse, though. I want the bourbon.
It's all good.
Show me the 95.5.
Yeah, it's all good.
Well, yeah. Andy, I want to say thank you again for coming on the show today. It was a pleasure, again, knowing more about you, the products that you're building, kind of the strategy behind it as well, because I think that's one thing that even, Fred hinted at the earlier is kind of like, the old why. You acquire a brand, you build it, and you got to start trying to see this baby starting to grow and start getting legs and starting to walk now.
Yeah, it's fun.
So, Andy, again, thank you again for doing that. Give you a chance to plug. If there's any way that people actually want to get in contact with you or know any more about MGP, just go to the website.
Yeah,
and try to find you there.
Go to the website. You can go to, andy.mancini@mgpingredients.com. And that's a mouthful, but just go to the MGP website.
Are you on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn?
Our brands
You're
are
not?
All over. Me? I do a little bit of that, yeah. I've got younger daughters who are.
Do you have like an anonymous handle or something?
No. I don't. I'm Andy Mancini, on Facebook and on Instagram, but it's all good. But guys, I want to thank you so much for taking the time.
Absolutely.
To invite me. It's been really a pleasure. I watch you guys. I mean, I subscribe to you guys on YouTube, and I think what you're doing are great, and your magazine's really, really good, Fred.
Oh, so thanks, man.
Kudos to that. So
well, we always appreciate it. Always good to have a great new personality on here to kind of spread the good love of MGP.
Yeah, I have a feeling it won't be the last time, especially, now that we know we have, someone who's willing to throw a little dirt in there for us every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
Love it.
Well, cheers, everybody. Thanks for tuning in, and we will see you all next week.